Hello, you're listening to the CZ of Movies. My name's Colin. I'm the C. Joining me is Zijan the Z. Hello, Zijan.
Hey, Colin. I just wanted to let everyone know that I finally finished the Wheel of Time series.
Congratulations.
I feel like everyone has been on this journey with me.
you feel you're cheating. What was it? How did it feel as you crossed the finish line?
Quite sad.
Yeah.
I mean, I've dedicated so much of my time on it, given that I'm not a quick reader by any means, and I've been, you know, reading other books in between as well.
Right, yeah.
So this has been a long, drawn-out event, but very sad. But now I'm actively involved in the Wheel of Time Reddit, so...
Oh, okay. Oh, is that still active?
That's where all the theories are. It's still ongoing.
So. See, I used to be part of Wheel of Time... Well, not a big part. I used to be part of Wheel of Time Mania or What Mania, but that was whilst the series was still coming out, so there's lots of theories about what was going to happen. Can you still have theories about the books once they're finished?
Not theories about books, but people are doing re-readings or for the first time as well. So it's quite a good community, I would say. So,
nice. Okay. And what is the general Reddit feeling about the TV series? Is there
I mean, I think they share the same sentiment as you and myself, okay. Really.
Today we are launching ourselves into the 21st century with a slightly experimental episode where it's going to be co-hosted by ChatGPT. GPT.
Yeah, our experimental episodes have been mixed.
Yes.
I mean, who can forget our notorious Tom Hanks episode?
That was great times. I think everyone has forgotten that. But this time we're gonna be playing around with ChatGPT, something I need to learn how to say. I looked up what GPT stood for and I've forgotten. Yeah. But anyone who doesn't know, it's a newish AI tool that... can answer questions and things, so we're going to throw some movie stuff at it. That's the main segment today. We're also looking at the films of Jeff Bridges. We've got a quiz on films of James Mangold and much more. Now, Zijan, before you launch into the news section, I have asked ChatGPT to make up a news item for me, which I'll be slipping in.
Okay.
And let's see if you can tell which one it is.
Okay, well... we kind of share the same news source in general, so...
It'll be quite easy, I think.
Well, my first bit of real news then...
Okay.
Yep. Is that Michelle Yeoh, Oscar winner Michelle Yeoh...
Oscar winner, yeah.
Is now starring in the Star Trek film for Paramount Plus. She's always been in Star Trek... what's it called? Begins with Discovery. Which was on Netflix for a bit, where she played Captain Philippa Georgiou, where she maintained her Malaysian accent, which is quite rare in most Hollywood stuff.
Okay.
So, and her character is has gotten very good reviews from the Star Trek community. I've only seen the first season of the Star Trek Discovery, only to see Michelle Yeoh in it.
Fair enough.
And I got bored after the first season, so I cannot tell you what happens after that.
She may have become the Emperor, based on what I've seen.
That happened in the first episode, first season though. Okay, so like, no spoilers alert, in case you don't care. But this happens in like the first few episodes anyway.
Okay.
Her character died in the main universe.
Ah.
The Emperor is basically a parallel universe version of her.
All right.
Where she's an evil dictator. So.
Well, there you go. Star Trek Section 31 is coming to Paramount Plus. I'm not a Star Trek person, so I don't know what any of that means. You're actually a Michelle Yeoh fan. Will you be getting Paramount Plus?
Paramount Plus, probably not.
No. You get a trial or something?
I may look into it. But I'm sure it'll come out into one of the other various streaming services eventually. Maybe.
I'm not sure that's what Paramount Plus are doing.
No?
Well, I have no idea. I don't think so, though.
Well, then, this is one Michelle Yeoh film that I have to miss.
Oh.
I mean, let me watch Last Christmas again.
Yeah. You didn't watch Last Christmas.
I didn't watch Last Christmas.
The rumour has it that this was basically canned and then she won an Oscar and they're like, oh, we better make it. But who knows. Sad news, Zijan. Sad news from the world of Sony's extended universe. Mm-hmm. And that Elmworth, though, is probably not happening. This is not been officially announced, but I think they were talking to, I don't know, someone at Sony, and they kind of said, not so much at the moment. So it was going to be starring Bad Bunny, who apparently is famous, and it's a Spider-Man villain that has appeared maybe like twice in the comics, and it basically just seems to have faded away.
So the thing is, this is not part of my news section. I don't think I saw this, so I have no idea whether this is true or not. But let's assume it's true for now until you give your rest.
Can I reveal?
Yeah, exactly. Let's assume everything is true. Then the audience can play along as well.
Yeah, be fun.
Yeah. Well, so I'll go along with it and say, good riddance.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I'm kind of tentatively thinking that maybe Craven will be all right, but who knows? And the Spider Woman thing, give that a fair shot. Madam Web, whatever it's called.
I really don't care anymore at this point of the Sony Spider Universe. The only Spider thing I want to watch is basically Spider-Man. So,
and Spider-Verse, of course.
Mm. Yep, that's true. Yep. That's Spider-Man, basically. My next bit of news, that to the surprise of no one, Marina Baccarin is rejoining Deadpool 3.
Mm.
So you must be over the moon.
I'm delighted, yes.
Uh-huh. She plays Vanessa, basically Deadpool's love. And also Stefan Kapicic is also returning as Colossus.
Yeah, not as you say, not surprised, but it's nice that they have signed on. It's a shame we didn't see much of Vanessa in Deadpool 2 because she
kind of died
dead for most of it. So she gets a bit more to do in this one. I saw Ryan Reynolds had tweeted a picture of, well, I think he described it at one point as X-Force and then deleted and put the tweet up again just saying X. But you know that team he put together in Deadpool 2 that all got killed off?
Yep.
He said something like X-Force lives forever or X lives forever or something like that. So we might be seeing the return of some of them, maybe.
Hmm. Well, Domino's going to return, isn't she?
I'm sure she will.
I mean, I really like her scene of her good luck powers. It looks so good on the screen.
Stacey Beats, great, yeah. And I don't know, Negasonic Teenage Warhead, has she been confirmed? Returning?
Maybe.
I'd be surprised. I mean, she's very good, but I don't think she's fighting off the offers from I think she'll fit into her schedule. Whenever I say something like that, it then turns out that they're in fact hugely famous with everyone under the age of 20.
Yep. We don't know that.
I'm going to click.
Because we are old.
Because we're so old. Speaking of being old, James Bond, it's been confirmed, will be played by a relatively unknown male in his 30s. Zijan, it's our time to shine.
Wow.
Yeah,
I need to get in shape first, to be honest.
I don't know.
Like, yeah, if I want to do the emerge out of the sea kind of thing again.
My James Bond is going to be very much clothed the whole time. Very, very clothed. It's not a surprise. After all rumours of like every British actor in Hollywood and quite a few non-British actors, they then say, yeah, it's going to be someone you probably don't know. It's like Daniel Craig wasn't a huge star before.
No, were any of the James Bond actors big before they were James Bond?
I don't think so. No. I'm looking back through this. So, I mean, Sean Connery was unknown. Maybe Roger Moore, I guess, was kind of known. George Lansby has never been one over anything. Timothy Dalton, I don't think so. Pierce Brosnan, again, I think he probably did Thomas Crown Affair, but wasn't. None of them were A-listers, I don't think, when they took the gig.
Okay.
I don't think so.
Us then, non-A-listers.
Yeah, there you go. Basically, it's us. If it comes down to you and me in the last audition, Zijan.
Yeah, if it does come to that, yes. Hypothetically speaking.
Then I wish you well. I mean, if it comes down to you and me, they haven't really got a very clear idea of what they're looking for. except actuaries. That's what they want.
Yeah. Speaking of old as well, Clint Eastwood has a cast for his next film, maybe last film, because he's 92 years old.
Is he? Well.
Yeah. It's called Juror Number 2.
Okay.
So it's a legal thriller. It's going to star Nicholas Holt, who was on Renfield recently, and Toni Collette. And this follows a member of a jury of a murder trial who suspects he may have had some part in a victim's death.
Oh.
So he needs to decide. So it's basically in a moral quandary whether he should, you know, act fairly or impartially as the juror in this case. Really, that sounds interesting. Yeah,
sounds pretty good. Yeah. Yeah, it's a weird subsection of legal thrillers or whatever that are all about the jury. It's like Runaway Jury or something like that. It's like juries seem to be a big part of American stuff more so than over here, because there's a whole thing about dismissing people from juries and choosing who's going to be on the jury. It's all a bit weird.
I still don't understand the, you know, why even have the jury. Like,
oh right,
yeah. I mean, it's not bound to be impartial, though. That's the thing. Like, today, and this is from my law A level.
Today we're not just covering films; we're covering the basics of the justice in a democracy. Okay, I mean, my only problem with juries really is having 12 people in them is weird. Do the Scottish system where there's 15. That's what I say.
That's what I learned from the life in the UK.
Yes, of course, of course. Have you ever served on a jury?
No. Am I allowed to? I'm not even a British citizen.
Don't know.
Well, I've not been caught yet anyway.
Well, neither have I. Neither have I. I'd love to do that. Depends what it is, I suppose.
Depends on what the case.
Yeah. Killers of the Flower Moon, the next film from Martin Scorsese, which will be starring Robert De Niro and Leonardo DiCaprio. I bring you sad news about that one as well, Zijin.
Okay.
The rumour is it's going to be 3 hours and 54 minutes long.
Okay, that is very sad news.
That is sad news. If you Google it, it says 3 hours 20 and someone else has said 3 hours 54, so I don't think they're quite firmed up yet. But that's longer than The Irishman.
No, if you're going to have a 3 hours and... No, 3:54. This is not going to go out in theaters, right? There's no way cinemas can make money out of this.
I think so. It's for Apple, I think, but I think it is also getting a cinematic release. Probably a small one, but
yeah, because cinemas. Yeah, I mean, the whole point of short films is they can get more people in and out as quickly as possible.
Can't go 4 hours without going to the toilet. This is mad. I mean, I've expressed before my frustration with Martin Scorsese's run times, but that's just insane. Like, I don't know how you get to a 4 hour movie and think, yep, there's nothing I can cut out of that.
I mean, you better have an intermission. This feels like a Bollywood film at this point.
Yeah. That's two movies worth.
Yeah, it's ridiculous, right?
As a slight sidetrack, James Gunn has said that Guardians of the Galaxy 3 is going to be 2 hours 29 minutes. Perfect. Well done, James Gunn. Yeah. You know what you're doing.
All right. What else do I have? More casting news. Juno Temple from good old Ted Lasso is joining Venom 3, speaking of Sony. Good on her for broadening.
Good on her.
Her resume.
Well done, Juno.
Even though she chose Venom 3, so
yeah.
Unfortunately.
Yeah. You're a fan of Ted Lasso, aren't you?
I have not seen the recent series, though. Okay. Is this the last one? I know they're trying to end it soon.
I don't know. Kelly Marcel, who co-wrote the first one and wrote the second one, is directing the third one, so it doesn't bode well.
Nope.
Anthony Ramos of In the Heights fame, who I think is in a Transformers movie about now or soon.
Yes.
It's going to be in Twisters. Sequel to Twister that we all didn't know we wanted.
Joining Daisy Edgar Jones.
Good for Anthony. I liked it a lot in that film. Not enough to watch Transformers or probably this, but still.
You just rewatch In the Heights again, right? I would rather rewatch In the Heights again many times.
Yeah, he doesn't need to make another film. I'll just keep watching that one.
Exactly. Chris Sanders, no one will know who he is, but he's back on voice duties for Lilo and Stitch, the live action Disney film. And Colin, I've tested you before, but yeah. Who is the alien in this?
Oh no. I got it wrong last time. Because it's being voiced by John Galifianakis, which makes me wonder who this guy is voicing. And the alien is Stitch.
Yes. Well done.
Nailed it.
So, yeah, Chris Sanders, who co-directed the original movie, will be, again, voicing Stitch, basically, who he voiced before in his film.
All right, so who's John Galifianakis voicing?
I have no clue, Collie. You keep bringing him up.
Did I make that one up early? I don't know.
Probably another alien.
Probably. Mia Goth, since we're doing casting news, has joined Blade, the long-awaited Mahershala Ali film that seems to have hit troubled times once or twice. Mia Goth, I know her best from playing Harriet Smith in the recent Emma. I think she's done other stuff that people like more than that, but I can't remember what it is.
Yeah, I've really forgotten that Blade is still happening.
Yeah, I think it's running through directors and writers, and apparently the rumour was that the latest version of the script has only got a couple of action scenes. They're not very good, and Mahershala Ali is not happy. So yeah. Who knows what's going on? But they're still adding cast.
Marvel's not doing very well, are they?
Well,
maybe Mahershala Ali can play Kang.
Yeah, are we going to cover that?
No.
If you want to know what's going on with Kang, just Google stuff.
Yep. Ethan Coen from the Coen brothers has a new film coming out called Drive Away Dolls, which is apparently a road trip comedy with Margaret Qualley and Geraldine Viswanathan, who I don't know who they are, but they are in Blockers and the Broken Hearts Gallery.
They're young people, so we don't know who they are.
Oh my goodness, no, yeah, definitely not. I'm surprised Ethan Coen directing a film with young people in it.
he's probably got children their age. I don't know anything about Ethan Coen's personal life, but maybe he has daughters and like, Margaret Qualley was great in Blockers, and he's like, great, they're in. I don't know. That's speculation.
It's arriving later this year. I think this is his first single directorial debut, if I'm not mistaken. I know Joel Coen did The Tragedy of Macbeth.
Yeah, apparently Ethan Coen directed a documentary.
Okay.
I think this is his first film. Weirdly, they do quite often get credited, like one as director, one as writer, when they both do everything together. So, But who knows? But this does sound like it's genuinely solo effort. I never saw that Macbeth thing, but apparently it was good.
Me neither.
Ryan Gosling will be playing Alex Stone in an adaptation of Secrets of the Sea by Olivia Sinclair. Alex Stone is a brooding marine biologist, and it's going to be directed by Ava DuVernay.
Ryan Gosling, brooding.
Brooding. Does he brood?
Well, he was brooding a lot in Blade Runner.
Yes, not so much as Ken.
Not so much, definitely not so much, especially in the new trailer that I saw of that.
Yeah, which looks a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. It looks good. I can't believe I'm saying this, but I'm looking forward to a bar.
Yeah, it's going
to
be great.
Yeah. Pedro Pascal and Ethan Hawke will be starring in Short Strange Way of Life by Pedro Almodovar. Basically, a man rides a horse across the desert.
Okay.
And isn't he comes to visit the sheriff, who's played by Ethan Hawke, and then, my goodness, when I copied this down, I definitely didn't copy it well.
is this a reference to the Bob Dylan song Brownsville Girl, whereas I saw a movie one time, it had a man riding across the desert, and it starred Gregory Peck?
I have no idea now. You're bringing references that's making me more confusing, because what I've copied down here.
That's about the film The Gunfighter, anyway.
Yeah, I definitely didn't even write the whole synopsis down.
Okay.
But it eventually worked as hired gunmen, put it that way.
Pedro Pascal
met together.
Okay.
Met each other and became hired gunmen. Yeah, you're right. Pedro Pascal is basically playing hired gunmen.
Again, point. Like in Mandalorian.
And The Last of Us.
Hmm.
Well, he's not really hired there, you see. But, clearly he was. He was hired to bring her all the way to the end.
And so, Kingsman 2. I think he was a hired gunman, and that was a Howard Lasso man, now I think about it. Fine. Edge of Tomorrow sequel apparently is deader than dead, according to Christopher McQuarrie. I only saw this because I follow Christopher McQuarrie on Twitter. He does Q&A's every now and again.
And, I am okay with this news.
Okay. I was really looking forward to this.
I know, but I really like the first film a lot. And I mean, unless they have a good idea, I'd rather they not make a sequel.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that, but I think he was saying that there was an idea and just couldn't get it to work, and yeah, it's a shame.
Because it's based on a Japanese movie. Is it a movie or a novel?
I think it's a manga, but I could be wrong.
Okay. So, yeah, who knows whether there's a sequel or not for that, but...
and I have no idea how accurate it was to the source material. But it's, I think, I love that film. Maybe it's best as a self-contained thing. Because I guess the sequel is just the same thing happens again. I don't know. But yeah, it's a shame not to see that. Mm. I'm not sure how... It didn't do brilliantly well at the box office, so maybe it's not a huge surprise.
My next bit of news is that Tessa Thompson is starring in Hedda, which...
Oh, yes.
Hedda. Which is going to be directed by Nia DaCosta. Apparently, Hedda is a very famous play.
Hedda Gabler, yeah.
Yeah, no, I...
It's Henrik Ibsen, isn't it?
I have no clue, but it's about Hedda, who's the daughter of a general, who's trapped in a marriage and a house that she does not want. That's the gist of it.
If you ever had to do a life in Norway test, Hedda Gabler would no doubt be on that. I don't know anything about it. And I'll be honest, Norway was a bit of a stab. Definitely Scandinavia. I think.
Oh, my goodness.
Apologies to our Norwegian listeners. I'm pretty sure it's Norway. Yeah, why not? Cool. Good. They've worked before, haven't they? She's worked with Nia DaCosta before.
Yeah. I think it was a film called The Little Woods, but I've not heard of that either.
Okay. We're going back to the Godzilla and Kong well in a film confusingly called Godzilla X Kong the New Empire. X is one of these things that people put in like songs these days, isn't it? It's like it's a... I'm trying to think of any Ariana Grande X Taylor Swift. Like I don't know what that means.
It's like crossing.
It's like you're there. I suppose it's kind of like... Because last one was Godzilla versus Kong, wasn't it? So I guess maybe this time they're not against each other. They're teamed up.
Maybe. I mean, yeah, I guess so.
There was a 30-second announcement video on YouTube that showed some monkey or other, which wasn't Kong, I don't think, and then the skulls of Godzilla and Kong. I don't know what's going on. Did you see the last one in the end?
No, but it got a good reviews though. But it was one of the first films that came out, one of the first few blockbusters that came out after the COVID pandemic. As you expect, a lot of people flocked to the cinema, so it made a lot of money.
Yeah, it was huge, wasn't it?
It was. So, but no, I've not seen it yet. I don't think I've seen any of the Godzilla. I have seen the King Kong film, the one with Tom Hiddleston and Brie Larson. Well, that's the only one I saw, but I've not seen any other iterations of Godzilla or King Kong.
That's the only one I've seen in this series. I'll be honest, I think they've moved quite a long way away from that in this. So I don't think I'll see this either. You never know.
Great. My last bit of news is that the Scream directing team are working on a Universal Monster movie, which I didn't know was still happening.
The Dark Universe is back.
Yeah.
Great news for everyone.
Yeah. Scream is going on well, though, so far. It's still making decent enough money. Slashers do, because the budget is always low.
Especially when they don't have to pay Neve Campbell anymore.
Poor Neve Campbell.
Poor Neve Campbell. Still, she got that. The Lincoln Lawyer to fall back on if they're still making that. We've got a Stanley documentary coming to Disney Plus this summer. I suspect it will not. It's basically going to be hagiography, isn't it, or hagiopic, because they've got an interest in making Stanley a hero. So I think Stanley was a good guy, but the rumors are that, well, more than rumors, that he was a good publicity man, but took a lot of other people's ideas and claimed he did more to them than he really did. So it'd be interesting to see whether the documentary covers that. I suspect it won't. I think it'd be more wasn't he great and wasn't he great with his fans kind of thing, which we'll see. I'll finish on a slight downer. The Marvels trailer apparently is the most downvoted MCU trailer on YouTube in YouTube history.
Yeah, I saw that. I feel like this is a backlash from back when Captain Marvel was up as well. So
yeah, because I saw this trailer, I thought it was phenomenal.
Me too. Yeah. I loved the trailer a lot. I thought, at first I was very unconvinced by this whole, swapping bodies kind of thing. Wasn't convinced with this whole The Marvels thing. But now after watching that trailer, I actually am very enthusiastic to watch the film.
Yeah. I watched the trailer like 3 or 4 times, which I don't usually do. And yeah, I was kind of like, whatever. And then now having seen this, I'm really looking forward to it. So,
what can you do, right? The internet's got a hit.
I also don't know how people know this, because don't they hide downvotes these days? So that confused me. Anyway, that's the news section. Zijian, which news story did I make up?
Okay, so I know which ones are definitely true because they're on my list as well.
Yeah.
So the only three that are not on my list are the first one, El Muerto. The second one, Scorsese's 4-hour-long film.
Yeah.
And Godzilla X King Kong.
Okay,
so these three were not on my list, and I don't recall seeing them anywhere. And you're gonna tell me that all of them are true anyway. But the El Muerto one is too good to be true. The Scorsese one is really, really bad.
Yeah,
it's probably going to happen because annoyingly, this one's probably going to happen. It can't be true, right? Like, come on. A 4-hour long film. I know it's Scorsese, but come on. I'm going to go with that.
Well, I'm afraid you're wrong. The news story that ChatGPT came up with was clearly so boring that you forgot it from your list. It's the one about Ryan Gosling playing a brooding marine biologist.
That was
entirely made up.
I definitely forgot about this. It was really boring. It was just like
Yeah, that's the...
It's a non-news.
Doesn't bode well, perhaps, for... I did just ask ChatGPT to come up with a new story, and it went for a whole press release, and there's quite a lot going on there. It also described Ryan Gosling as the dashing and talented Oscar-winning actor, Ryan Gosling. I'm pretty sure Ryan Gosling not won an Oscar. He's known for his impressive range and captivating performances in films such as La La Land and Drive. He's honored to be part of this incredible project. Can't wait to bring Dr. Strange's complex characters to life on the big screen. Expected to be a sweeping romantic drama set against the backdrop of a mysterious and alluring deep sea. So, sounds pretty good.
But too bad it's not true.
Too bad it's not true. We move on to C or not to Z, the section where we tell you about films where you've recently seen and whether you should see them or not.
Yep. I saw the film Wonder.
Wonder.
Not to be confused with The Wonder, which Florence Pugh is starring in.
Yes. What's the film Wonder?
Wonder is the Julia Roberts film.
Do I know
Julia
this
Roberts,
film?
Owen Wilson, and Jacob Tremblay. It came out quite a while back in 2017.
Oh, right. Because when they've got a kid with...
Yeah, with Treacher Collins syndrome. Basically, his face is deformed.
Right.
The film is about... Jacob Tremblay, if you didn't know, was in Room. With Brie Larson as a little boy. So he plays a boy called August Pullman with that Treacher Collins syndrome, trying to fit into school, basically. As you expect with this kind of films, it's a heartwarming story about a boy trying to overcome prejudice and bullying and all that nasty stuff. And it's a decent film. It's very sweet. It's very family oriented. It looks into lots of different perspectives. Like you see the perspective of his sister, who gets a little bit sidelined because all the focus is on her little brother, for example. And then you want to see how she's coping with that. You have a look at his mother, who has to sacrifice her career to take care of him when he was younger, etc. So it focuses on different perspectives, so it's not just his. So that is, it's nice to watch. Although it did go into some other perspectives that I did not care for, like her sister's best friend, who's not her friend anymore after camp, so we need to find out why. Sometimes I just don't care about this kind of perspectives, but they put it in anyway. But I think it's pretty decent. It's gotten some flack from critics for not putting someone with the same condition Augie in the film. I think it's pretty decent. It's on Netflix right now, so if you've got anything to watch.
I've just cancelled my Netflix subscription, which is which is the first time. I've still got another couple of weeks until it ends. But I've had it non-stop since 2016, I think. But I just got to the point where I was like looking at what's on Netflix. I think I don't want to watch any of this. There's no new films coming on here that I care about. I had a look and see like Netflix originals, and there's nothing coming for months.
Oh wow!
I'll be back again, I'm sure. Particularly when we get the Scott Pilgrim series. But for now, gone.
Just Disney Plus for you.
Just Disney Plus. That's it.
Yeah. Wow.
And my absurd DVD collection.
Yes, that's true.
Speaking of which, I watched a film even older than that, even older than like 5 years ago, which is Strictly Ballroom, the Baz Luhrmann film. I think it was his first film. It's where Strictly Come Dancing gets its name, in case anyone was on. Yep. Or partly. Have you seen Strictly Ballroom?
No, but I am an avid fan of Strictly Come Dancing.
Well, there you go. I am not. So it's in Australia. It's set amongst ballroom dancers and them in ballroom dancing competition. We've talked about Baz Luhrmann a fair bit on here. We did a review of Elvis, didn't we? But some of his films I love. Romeo and Juliet is one of my favourite films. I hated Moulin Rouge. I didn't think much of Elvis, so I didn't really know what to expect. And it was, whatever I was expecting, this was very much different to that in that it's much broader comedically than I was expecting. And it starts off in a kind of mockumentary style where they bring up they interview various people directly to camera and they're talking about a particular incident where someone did dance moves that they shouldn't have done. And it feels like, kind of like, I was going to say like The Office, but I guess broader than that. Maybe like a Drop Dead Gorgeous or something, just kind of really big comedy and very larger than life characters, which was very much not what I was expecting. And then they kind of abandoned that after the first 10-15 minutes, which was again slightly odd. It's at heart it's a love story between a ballroom dancer and a woman who would like to be a ballroom dancer, but she can't possibly because she has tied up hair and glasses.
Oh no!
I wish I really wasn't expecting them to do that. Anyway, I think
it's the worst thing to happen to a woman.
It is the worst thing to happen to a woman. And again, it is played quite broad. Like she's saying, oh, I've only been here for 2 years, so I've not got a partner yet. And then you see everyone dancing around and she's just dancing with nobody. So it's a kind of tonal mismatch of quite heartfelt love story, but then really broad comedy. So I quite enjoyed it. I had a good time. But I think, I guess it has the hallmarks of someone who's got a couple of different ideas and has tried to do both of them rather than streamlining it. So it's not left to the top of my favourite Baz Luhrmann films, but it's kind of almost as a curiosity to see his earlier work. It was quite interesting.
Well, I mean, Strictly Come Dancing is very popular anyway, so...
Strictly Come Dancing is indeed very popular, but not with me. I don't care about dancing, so maybe people enjoy this film more from a dancing perspective. I don't know. Because there's a whole big thing about how he wants to do dance moves that people just aren't ready for, but I couldn't really tell the difference. So.
Okay.
Fine, we move on then to our main segment of the day, ChatGPT. We both prepared a few questions for it. Let's see how this works. But the idea is we're just going to ask it some questions and then discuss its answers, I think.
Okay. Let's try this.
My first question is going to be, I'm going to ask it to describe the plot of an Indiana Jones sequel called The Dial of Destiny. Because we're going to get one.
Yes.
And I'm interested to see how imaginative this film actually is.
Yep.
Or if it's just going to be... You know, it's criticism that a lot of things get these days, isn't it? That they could have been written by AI.
Yeah, and that is because AI comes up with very broad answers, though. Before this, I've been playing around with ChatGPT, as I was telling you earlier, and some of the answers are just too bland for me to even put them through, because it's just, is this the best you can do?
Kind of thing. Which, in fairness, is sometimes what films are like. Here we go. It's kicked off with the, unfortunately, I don't have access to any information about future Indiana Jones sequels. But it has helpfully given me the plot of an imaginary sequel called The Dial of Destiny. In this hypothetical sequel, I'll maybe skip some of this, Indiana Jones is approached by an old friend, an archaeologist, who has made an incredible discovery, a dial that is said to have the power to control time itself. The friend is being pursued by a dangerous group of treasure hunters who will stop at nothing to get their hands on the dial. Indiana sets on a perilous journey from the deserts of Egypt to the jungles of South America.
It's very specific.
Yes. They encounter all manner of obstacles along the way. Less specific. Oh, here we go. Including rival treasure hunters, ancient traps, and deadly creatures. Again, could be more specific. It has the ability to transport them through time. They must use this power to stop the treasure hunters from using the dial for their own nefarious purposes. In a thrilling climax, Indiana and his team must navigate through time and space to stop the treasure hunters from altering the course of history and changing the fate of the universe. In the end, they succeed in thwarting the treasure hunters' plans and safeguarding the dial, which they leave hidden away in a secret location, ensuring that its power will never again fall into the wrong hands. They stole that from Ark of Covenant. That's where they, at the end of Raiders, they store it in a hidden location.
I think ChatGPT struggles with coming up with new ideas because it has to be based on data, right? That's the thing.
That's literally how it works. But, I mean, time travel, I think we're going to get that.
Yep. I mean... Indiana Jones saved the day. I'm pretty sure
we're going to get that. Yeah. A dangerous group of treasure hunters. That seems quite likely.
Yeah.
I think the only bit to look out for when the film comes around is, do they go from the deserts of Egypt to the jungles of South America?
I mean, it could happen.
The trailer didn't seem to show Egypt or South America. I'm trying to think, is that where he went in the previous ones?
Where else did he go in the past? I know he was in a desert for one.
Yeah, was that Egypt?
No idea.
No, I don't know.
Yeah. And, wasn't he in the jungle in Crystal Skull?
Oh, yes, I think he probably was. I was thinking that Temple of Doom was probably South America. Hmm. But I'm not sure. I mean, it's vague. It's vaguer than I'd like.
Yeah.
All the manner of obstacles along the way.
Yep.
Yeah. But I think if we... when we do the episode on that... Maybe we can come back to this and see whether how closely the film aligns to this. Because I think They haven't confirmed it's time travel, have they? But I think that's the rumour. In fairness, Dial of Destiny, it wasn't a huge leap to make that time travel.
Nope, exactly. Mm. Yeah, I can see that coming. I can see that happening. I mean, anyway, we saw a DH in Harrison Ford in the trailers as well.
So yes.
Who knows where this time travelling will lead them to.
I'm just going to follow up on this one. Please give an imagined line from Indiana Jones in this film. I found I have to keep putting the word imagined in because otherwise it just says, this doesn't exist. Here we go. Time may be the ultimate treasurer, but some things are better left untouched. It's all right.
Yeah.
I suppose. It's all right. It's a bit...
Yeah, it's not the worst line I've heard from Indiana Jones.
I'm not sure... Would you put that on a tagline on the poster? Time may be the ultimate treasure, but some things are better left untouched.
It's a bit too wordy.
It is a bit too wordy. Please condense that into 4 words. Here we go. Time's untouchable treasures. Not a fan of that.
No. Not great.
And it's also 3 words.
Yeah. It doesn't know how to count.
Yep. What have you got? Do you want an alternate here?
Yeah, I mean, like, I was trying out with random stuff, as you know, I've been playing with it. So one of them was, and both of us have not watched the films before, but this may happen, but give the plot for Fast and the Furious 50.
50?
Yeah, well, nice. Because why not?
Like it, yeah.
It's going to happen, right, eventually. So this is how it goes. In Fast and the Furious 50, we find Dom and his team still racing cars and pulling off high-stakes heists. But this time, they're all much older and have settled into retirement.
Yes, makes sense.
However, a new threat arises in the form of a young and ambitious street racer who is determined to take down his crew and becoming the new king of the underground racing scene. To stop this new adversary, he must come out of retirement, assemble his old crew, he must work together to stop the young upstart and protect their legacy. As the action heats up, they race through crowded streets, jump over bridges, and navigate treacherous terrain in their souped-up cars. How vague is this, man? Yeah.
Treacherous
along
terrain.
The way, yes. They encounter unexpected allies and formidable foes. Like, in the end, Dom and his crew emerge victorious, but not without paying a heavy price.
Ooh, what's the heavy price?
They do not describe it.
Okay. I mean... Again, it feels like it's something that Fast and Furious would definitely do is pull in a younger, right? I know, again, we've not seen these films. Maybe they've already done this. Pull in a younger adversary and see how they can fight against that.
He ends with a sentence, Dom and his team prove that experience and family are the keys to stay on top in the world of underground racing.
Yes. Yes. I mean, they've nailed that. I've not seen these, but I feel like, if anything, they have been written by AI, so it's not a huge... my next question, I decided to write the question whilst you were doing yours, so I've got it prepped up here now. I asked it to give me the opening scene from an imagined sequel to Jerry Maguire. So we seem to be going down the sequels route, which I guess makes sense. In the opening scene, we see Jerry, now in his 50s, standing on a stage at a sports marketing conference. He looks out at the sea of faces before him and takes a deep breath before beginning his speech. As I stand before you today, I can't help but think back to a time when I was younger, when I thought I had it all figured out. I had a successful career, a great girlfriend, and a big house in the suburbs. But then one night everything changed. I wrote a mission statement, a declaration of principles, and in doing so, I changed my life. Jerry pauses, taking a sip of water before continuing. And now, years later, I find myself facing a new challenge. It's not enough to just have a successful career or a big house. I want to make a difference. I want to have athletes be more than just commodities. I want to help them be human beings. I want to help them find their purpose, their passion, their soul. The audience applauds as Jerry finishes his speech, and as he steps off the stage, he is approached by a young woman who introduces herself as a sports agent. Mr. Maguire, she says, extending her hand, I couldn't agree with you more. I think we should work together. Jerry smiles, taking her hand. I think you might be onto something, he says. Let's talk. Is that just the plot of Jerry Maguire again?
It feels like it, yes.
Now, I didn't find that inspiring.
Nope.
So I asked, where's Dorothy in all this?
Yep.
You remember Dorothy, the character played by Renée Zellweger.
Yep.
ChatGPT responded, my previous response is not related to Dorothy from The Wizard of Oz, as there was no mention of her in the prompt.
Oh, no.
Anyway, I asked to say the character played by Renée Zellweger, and I've noticed this a few times. I think ChatGPT is a pessimist. Dorothy Boyd, played by Renée Zellweger, is no longer in a relationship with Jerry. They had an amicable split years ago and have since gone their separate ways.
Of course, yes.
She's now a successful businesswoman. They've lost touch, but she still remembers their time together fondly and wishes him well.
Wow.
Is that just... Is GPT trying to work out whether Renée Zellweger would say yes to this project? And like, she's not going to do it. Imagine if they did a sequel to Jerry Maguire and Renée Zellweger wasn't in it.
I think that would be quite disappointing to a lot of people.
Including me.
You wouldn't watch it, right?
I mean, I definitely watch it.
But, Tom Cruise is doing it.
But in this opening scene where Jerry is smiling at this young woman who's a sports agent, I would not be happy.
Yeah.
I mean, they've lost touch. Does that mean that Jerry Maguire doesn't see the kid anymore? It's very sad. It is very sad. This is very sad. Let's see. I'm sorry if my response is not what you're hoping for.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you, ChatGPT. I did put in a few more sequels. I've put asked them to write a sequel to My Best Friend's Wedding.
Nice. Okay. Classic.
I love those classic rom. Those classic rom coms are nice to just see what's going to happen to our characters anyway. So
before you do this, this is what I meant about it being pessimistic. Is I did once ask it to do a sequel to Notting Hill, and they'd broken up.
Everyone just breaks up basically.
Anyway, look, My Best Friend's Wedding.
They didn't get together in the end, though. That's the thing. So.
Cameron Diaz and Dan Mulroney got together, don't they? And then,
they did, but not Julia Roberts. ChatGPT can't break them up again. You hope.
That's true. They can just kill them off or something.
Exactly. You hope. So, we are trying to go overrun. We're trying to not make ChatGPT too pessimistic. So, let's see. In the sequel to My Best Friend's Wedding, we catch up with Julianne Potter, now a successful food critic. After years of dating and failed relationships, Julian has finally found the love of her life in a charming and witty writer named Daniel. As the two plan their wedding, Julian begins to have doubts about her readiness for marriage.
So is Julia Roberts' character called Julia?
Julianne. Despite her reservations, she goes through with the ceremony only to realize moments before saying I do that she cannot go through with it. Isn't this like Runaway Bride?
Yes, this is very similar.
Yep, so she returns to her hometown to take some time to herself and reconnect with old friends. She runs into Michael, her ex-best friend and former love interest, who is now a successful businessman with a family of his own.
Is this Rupert Everett?
No.
Oh, no, it's Dermot Mulroney, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Okay. Despite their complicated past, the two strike up a friendship and Julian begins to see Michael in a new light. As she begins to rekindle her friendship with Michael, she explores her passions, also her career, blah, 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 blah. In the end, she realizes that her doubts about marriage are rooted in her fear of losing herself in a relationship.
Okay.
With this newfound clarity, she reunites with Daniel and the two make the decision to start their lives together with a stronger foundation of understanding and communication.
Well, that makes a lot of sense, doesn't it?
Yeah, the movie ends with Julian and Daniel's wedding, surrounded by fans and family, including Michael and his wife, where Julian gives a heartfelt speech about the importance of staying true to oneself in relationships.
I mean, they've nailed that. Other than, where's Rupert Everett's character?
Yeah, well...
I feel like he would have to give I was going to say best man speech, but maybe a equivalent for the...
I'm sure he'll show up, though.
He has to, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay. I mean, that's...
That's good, right?
That's more optimistic than I'm getting.
Than all the breakups. Yeah, that's because he always needs a conflict, ChatGPT. So there's no conflict when they're all paired up at the end of the film.
No, that's true. And it feels like this... I keep saying Dermot Mulroney. It was Dermot Mulroney, wasn't it?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, it feels like that's more of a cameo appearance from him. And Cameron Diaz seems to just turn up at the end, maybe.
Yeah.
Which is probably fair.
I mean, she didn't do much in the first film as well.
Didn't she? It's been a while since I saw that.
Yeah, she was a fiancé, but it's not focused on her.
Fair enough. Fair enough. I've asked it to write a synopsis for Notting Hill if it included time travel. I'll be honest, I don't think it's nailed it, but there we go. So it starts in the same way as the original film. William Thacker, Hugh Grant, is a struggling bookstore owner in Notting Hill who falls in love with the famous Hollywood actress Anna Scott, Julie Roberts. But as they begin their romance, William discovers that Anna is actually a time traveller from the future. She's come back in time to experience life in the early 21st century. As they navigate the ups and downs of the relationship, Anna takes William on a journey through time, visiting different eras and experiencing life in different cultures. Again, a little vaguer than I'd like there.
That's the issue with ChatGPT.
But as much as they try to make the relationship work, they begin to realise the constraints of time travel are too great to overcome. Anna can't stay in the past forever. William can't leave his life in the present behind. In the end, they must say goodbye. Why is it so pessimistic for me? But not before they have one.
Maybe it's just your ChatGPT, Colin. You've got a very sad bot.
But no, not before they have one last adventure together, travelling through time to visit some of history's greatest love stories. Again, vague. As William watches Anna disappear through the time, into the time vortex, he reflects on their time together and how she changed his life forever. As he walks back to his bookstore, he realises that even though their love was brief, it was still the greatest adventure of his life. I asked it to imagine a scene for me, but it's, to be honest, too boring to read. Give me a tagline for this film. Let's go for that instead. Love knows no bounds, not even time.
Could be worse. I hate it. Yeah. I like this genre twisting thing because I actually did some as well before.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
So I did. Asked ChatGPT to reimagine The Exorcist as a romantic comedy.
Love it. Okay.
Yeah. So in this reimagining of The Exorcist, the story begins with a young and charming priest named Michael who has just been assigned to a new parish in a bustling city. There he meets the lovely and free-spirited Jane, a successful and independent businesswoman who has recently moved back to the area. Despite their vastly different lifestyles, Michael and Jane find themselves drawn to each other and begin a whirlwind romance. But their happiness is soon interrupted when Jane starts exhibiting strange behavior, including speaking in tongues and exhibiting superhuman strength. Worried for Jane's safety, Michael seeks the help of his mentor, Father Marcus, who discovers that Jane is possessed by a mischievous demon who is intent on wrecking...
A mischievous demon?
Oh. I'm sure the demon in the original Exorcist was... not mischievous.
I've not seen The Exorcist, but my understanding was that it's not mischievous.
As they work together to exorcise the demon, Michael and Jane's relationship is put to a test, with the demon using its powers to try and tear them apart. But through their love and determination, Michael and Jane are able to overcome the demon and emerge stronger than ever. The film ends with a romantic and heartwarming scene of Michael and Jane exchanging vows in front of their family and friends. With Father Marcus officiating the ceremony and the demon vanquished once and for all. With its blend of romance, humor, and supernatural elements, The Exorcist, a love story, is a charming and entertaining twist on a classic horror tale.
I mean, that works, doesn't it? It's pretty good at that kind of thing of lumping a plot from one thing into the tropes of another thing. Mm. Yeah.
So yeah, I like the genres changing. I have quite a few as well, but it's always good fun. The other one I did was reimagine Juno as a horror film.
Right. Okay.
Yeah.
It's kind of a Rosemary's Baby type thing.
Yeah. This, I think, it's a good plot as well. Juno McGuff, a teenager who is unexpectedly pregnant, decides to give her a child for adoption. She chooses a seemingly perfect couple,
okay, so far,
Mark
so
and
Juno,
Vanessa,
yes,
to raise her baby. However, as she starts to visit them more frequently, Juno senses that something is off about them and their secluded mansion.
Mansion, love it, okay.
One day, while exploring the mansion, Juno discovers a hidden room filled with eerie artifacts and strange symbols. She also notices that Mark and Vanessa are behaving more and more erratically and that their attention is not solely focused on the unborn child. As the weeks progress, she starts to experience vivid nightmares and hallucinations. She becomes convinced that Mark and Vanessa are part of a cult that's trying to use her child for a sinister purpose. Okay. She also suspects that they are responsible for a string of mysterious disappearances in the town. Her paranoia intensifies when she finds a journal that reveals the true nature of the cults and its connection to her own family. She realizes that she must escape the mansion. The tension builds up as the Juno navigates the labyrinth mansion and confronts the members of the cult while trying to protect her unborn child. The climax of the movie features a heart-pumping chase sequence and a shocking twist that leaves the audience reeling. Again, they don't explain the twist.
Oh, we've got to find out what the twist is.
Yeah. With a darker tone, haunting visuals, and more intense plot, Juno can transform from a quirky indie comedy to a terrifying horror movie that will haunt the viewer's dreams.
Can we get it to give the twist, or is it not?
Yep,
I will do that,
but you'll need to wait like 5 minutes.
Okay.
So.
Well, I've asked it to give a scene from an imagined crossover between Deadpool and Mary Poppins. We find our anti-hero Deadpool standing on a London street corner, surrounded by the smog and grime of Victorian-era London. Suddenly he hears the sound of an umbrella popping open and turns to see Mary Poppins floating down from the sky, her prim and proper demeanour clashing with Deadpool's rough and irreverent style. Well, hello, Mary, Deadpool drawls. What brings you to this neck of the woods? I'm here to help some children, Mr. Poole, Mary replies crisply. What are you doing here? Just looking for a bit of fun as usual, Deadpool says with a grin. But since you're here, how about we team up? I could use a bit of your special magic. Mary looks at Deadpool skeptically, but after a while she nods her agreement. As they walk down the street, Mary holding her umbrella and Deadpool cracking jokes, they come across a group of orphans being harassed by a group of toughs. Sure. Deadpool immediately springs into action, pulling out his swords and charging forward. Mary, for her part, remains calm and collected, using her umbrella to deflect blows and create pockets of magical air to protect the children. Magical air? Is that a thing?
What? Where does she do that?
As they fight side by side, Deadpool can't help but admire Mary's poison grace, even as he continues to crack jokes and take down their enemies. Who knew Mary Poppins had it in her? He quips as they stand victorious. Mary simply smiles, her eyes twinkling with hidden depths. You'd be surprised, Mr. Poole, she says. You'd be surprised. I do find that ChatGPT is not great with jokes. I think they tell us that he makes some jokes, and then says, who knew Mary Poppins had it in her, is the joke. I mean, that's...
No, that's quite bad.
It's not really funny, is it?
No, not really.
Can you give me a funnier line than who knew Mary Poppins?
I mean, humor is subjective, though, Colin. You know that.
It is. But I said please.
So.
Sure, how about this one? I guess it's true what they say. A spoonful of sugar helps the ass kicking go down.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that will be the tagline.
I can definitely.
Mary Poppins ex Deadpool film.
Yeah, yes. I think Ryan Reynolds could definitely pull that off.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that would be the line. Yeah. Anyway, here's the twist from Juno. I've asked for two just in case.
Love it.
So the first shocking twist is that Juno herself is unknowingly a part of the cult.
What?
As she delves deeper into the secrets of the mansion and uncovers the true nature of the cult's plan, she realizes her own family has been involved in the cult for generations and that her pregnancy was not an accident, but a part of a larger plan.
That is dark.
Yeah. The perfect couple, Mark and Vanessa, were actually trying to protect her from the other members of the cult who wanted to use her child for their own twisted purposes. This twist adds an extra layer of complexity and horror to the story as Junior realizes that she must not only escape from the cult but also comes to terms with her own identity and heritage.
Yeah, wow. That's...
Yep. That's dark, right?
That is dark.
Good old Junior has become a very, very scary film.
Mine might not believe in love, but yours is... Also got some pretty dark stuff going on there.
Yeah, but it works though. I think as a horror film, I think it actually does work because it takes the concept of Juno and makes it into a horror film. It's very good. I quite like this.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I wouldn't watch it, but it's but that's because which means it's probably done a fairly good job because I wouldn't watch horror. You got anything else, or shall I?
Yeah, I'll give you the second twist anyway.
Oh, yes, second twist, yes. Yeah.
The other twist, which is quite... this is a more boring twist, actually, because Juno's suspicions and fears were all just in her head. I know. And that Mark and Vanessa were actually a normal and loving couple.
In a secluded mansion.
Her nightmares and hallucinations were a result of her own anxieties about giving up her child and the guilt she felt about the decision. I think that can work, you know, because a lot of horror films has a lot of hidden symbolism in it anyway. That's it really.
Fair enough.
Doesn't add anymore.
I've asked ChatGPT to give me the a song from the musical of The Social Network. So we have Mark Zuckerberg, He's typing on his computer as he tries to code the next big feature, and he sings a song called Algorithms and Dreams. I'm sitting here in front of my screen, code lines, pixels, and my caffeine. I'm typing, scrolling, clicking away. I'll create something new, that's what I say. The first one is the chorus. Algorithms and dreams, that's what this world needs. I'll build something great, that's my plan. I'll be the next big thing, mock my words, understand. I don't care much for small talk or chat. Socializing is not where it's at. I prefer the logic, the numbers, the code. That's where I find my comfort zone.
I think ChatGPT is pretty good at rhyming.
It can definitely rhyme stuff.
Yeah.
Then of course, we've got the bridge. Sometimes strange, sometimes cold, but I've got a vision that's worth more than gold. I'll change the way we connect, the way we share, and the world will never be the same, I swear. There you go. And then the chorus again.
It works.
It works, doesn't it?
It works.
I think Algorithms and Dreams is a great title for a song.
Yeah, I think it definitely works as a... I think it definitely works. I've seen ChatGPT do a lot of rhymes as well before, and I think they do it really well.
Yeah, the scansion isn't always there. But the song captures the drive and ambition that ultimately led to the creation of Facebook, even as it hints at the human cost of Zuckerberg's obsession with his algorithms and dreams. Did it hint at that? A little bit, I suppose.
It wants to be the next big thing.
Yes. Algorithms and Dreams, that's a great title.
No, I love that.
Happy with that.
I'm putting my last one in anyway because I think we're running short of time as well, just in case. But just to end on a big one, just to see where it goes, I say, what's the next big movie trend?
Okay.
Just to see what it comes up with, anyway.
Ooh. Yeah.
And ChatGPT came up with the worst answer. I say, like, it doesn't give a concrete answer or anything, it just make broad remarks. So. First, it caveats itself, obviously.
Yes.
As an AI language model, I don't have access to information about the future. Good, thanks, ChatGPT. I can say that there's been several recent trends in the film industry, such as the rise of superhero movies, remakes of classic films, and yada, 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 adaptations of books and video games. It's difficult to predict what the next big trend will be, as the film industry is constantly evolving, adapting to audience preferences and new technology. There you go, how broad it is. And then, however, some industry experts speculate that the trend towards streaming platforms and online distribution may continue to shape the film industry in the coming years. So basically, ChatGPT is...
That's a cop-out.
Nothing. Yep.
Yeah.
Horrible.
I've got one that's just typing out now, which I'm quite excited by.
I'll end this on a high, Colin.
Yep. Please give a scene from how two actuaries called Colin and Zijan could join the MCU. Here we go.
Yes.
In this imagined scene, we find our two actuaries, Colin and Zijan, sitting in their office, crunching numbers and analysing data. So far, so accurate. When suddenly they hear a loud commotion outside. Curious, they get up from their desks and peer out the window, only to see a group of Avengers engaged in a battle with a horde of alien invaders. As they watch in awe, a stray blast from Iron Man's repulsor beam hits their building, sending them flying back into their office. Dazed but unharmed, they look around and realize that they have stumbled across some valuable information. Data on the aliens' weaknesses and vulnerabilities that could help the Avengers defeat them. I don't know how being not across the office helped them on that, but there you go. Especially since they were not across the office by Iron Man, not by the aliens. Anyway. Excited by the prospect of using their actuarial skills to help save the world, Colin and Zijan quickly put together a report detailing their findings and send it to the Avengers.
That's so sad, man. That's the saddest way of joining the MCU ever.
Impressed by their work, the team invites them to join their ranks as part of the support staff. Over the next few weeks, Colin and Zijan work closely with the Avengers, providing them with critical data and analysis that helps them turn the tide of the battle against the alien invasion. Along the way, they develop a deep respect for the team and their dedication to protecting the world from threats. As the dust settles and the Avengers prepare to head back to their own universe. What? Okay. Tony Stark, Iron Man, pulls Colin and Zijan aside. Listen, guys, he says, I know you're not superheroes like us, but you've got skills that are just as important. Yes. Yes, we do. We could use someone like you in our world. How would you like to join the MCU? A classic Tony Stark line. Stunned but excited by the prospect, Colin and Zijan agreed to the offer. With their actuarial skills and newfound respect for the Avengers, they are ready to take on whatever challenges the MCU has in store for them.
It's good to know that MCU does not have any actuaries, basically.
Yeah.
At all.
I like the fact that Iron Man refers to it as the MCU. I've asked for the title to the movie, and the title is Numbers to the Rescue, an actuarial tale in the MCU.
No, I won't watch this film.
No, I won't watch this film at all.
Oh, that's great, though. That's great. Oh.
That was a lot of fun. The thing that inspired me to this was I asked it to put together a multiverse team of people from different franchises. I think we've timed out here, but maybe we'll do it again sometime because I had a lot of fun doing that.
Yeah, it works.
Let's keep going because I think we're probably going to cut some of that out. So let's quickly talk about our next segment, which is Actor Factor, where we look at the films of a particular actor and choose our favourite and least favourite. And this time it is Iron Man's buddy, Jeff Bridges.
Iron Man's buddy, indeed. Yeah, I thought I would have seen more Jeff Bridges film. Apparently not. I've only seen 4.
Oh, wow. I've seen 12, but again, I was looking through his list and there's a lot of films of his that I was like, I must watch that, and I have not got around to.
So. Yeah, I think so too. I've not watched like True Grit.
Yeah,
so I can't say much about it. I've only watched Iron Man, Tron Legacy, Kingsman, and Bad Times at the El Royale.
Is he in Kingsman?
Yeah, Kingsman 2.
All right, I seem to have left on my list off my list by mistake. So I've seen 13 of his films. Mm-hmm. Do you want to talk about any of those?
No, I mean we've talked about Bad Times at El Royale before. You know, you liked it. I'm okay with it.
Mm.
Strong first two bits, weak third, last third. Iron Man. We've not spoken about it because the podcast was came much later than Iron Man did.
Hmm.
But it started the MCU and everyone knows about it. Tron Legacy, which wasn't great by any means necessary. Like, I don't know, they were trying to make Tron the thing back then, but honestly, all the neon.
Hmm. I think it's coming back.
Is it?
I think so. Maybe in a TV series or something.
And the Kingsman sequel was okay. I only remember that Elton John is in it, which was
quite funny. I liked it more than the reviews, but I've not gone back to it.
No, me neither.
I felt like it wasted. Again, it was one of those, it set up a whole kind of American branch and then barely used them. Like Channing Tatum, Halle Berry, went for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've seen all of those. I've seen the first Tron, which, to be honest, I thought was pretty bad. I know it's a kind of...
classic.
Yeah, but I didn't like it at all. The Big Lebowski is the film he's best known for. Coen Brothers, he plays the dude. Which I think it's, I mean, again, it's a huge favourite of a lot of people. It's a cult classic. I think it would have been better if I'd been stoned, I think. having never been stoned, this is...
so you can't relate to it.
I'm taking a step. But it feels like it's designed for people to watch whilst under the influence. How to Lose Friends and Alien People isn't very good.
That's a Simon Pegg one, right?
Simon Pegg, Kiss and Dunst. And it's based on a memoir by Toby Young, and Jeff Bridges plays his boss. I have seen True Grit, which is again another Coen Brothers, and it's very good. Yeah, definitely worth a watch. Hayley Steinfeld was Oscar nominated for that. It's a good one. Hell or High Water, which is kind of a neo western, is really good. I'm trying to remember. I think he plays a sheriff, if I remember rightly, but it's Ben Foster and someone else. Oh, I can't remember who it was now. Casey Affleck, maybe? Mm. No, I'm not sure about that. That's really good, even if I can't remember much of it. The Only Living Boy in New York is a film that I watched, and I remember enjoying it, and then like, almost immediately couldn't remember anything about it. He plays a writer, and there's a kid who really looks up to him and tries to get him to be his mentor, from memory. And Crazy Heart, where he won his Oscar, where he plays a country musician alongside Maggie Gyllenhaal, which... felt a bit like we haven't given him an Oscar yet. Let's give him it for this, because I don't think it's a performance that will live long in the memory. The only one I've not mentioned is Seabiscuit, which...
The Tobey Maguire.
Horses and stuff. I don't remember liking it. Oh, and The Open Road. Back when I was... I decided at one point I was going to watch a bunch of road trip movies. So this is Justin Timberlake, Kate Mara, and Justin Timberlake... he's reconnecting with his dad. He was played by Jeff Bridges. It's fine. What's our favourite Jeff Bridges movie?
Iron Man in my list, I guess.
Yeah, I'm probably going to go Hell or High Water, even though I don't remember as much about it. Just I think it is a really good one. I do also love Bad Times. I think if the third act of Bad Times the Royale had been better, it would be definitely top of my list. But I still like it a lot. And your worst one of those four?
Tron Legacy.
Yeah, to be honest, looking at this list, Tron Legacy was probably the worst anyway. So yeah.
It's really bad.
Also, they tried to CGI, like, de-age him, didn't they? Which they were not quite ready for. There you go, Actor Factor. Next time we'll do Look Back in Oscar, where we watch a film that has won Best Picture Oscar in the past. CJ, what are we looking at next time?
Yeah, this is going to be interesting, because I've read the book recently as well.
Oh, yeah.
But Around the World in 80 Days.
And for anyone who's wondering, that's not the Jackie Chan version, or the David Tennant version, or the Michael Palin version. It's the David Niven version, I think.
Yeah, the book definitely did not age well, so we'll see.
All right.
The film definitely won't.
Let's find out. Okay. And our final segment is the quiz, where we're quizzing on the films of James Mangold. Zizan, I did ask ChatGPT to ask the questions for me.
Okay.
But it got several of them wrong. So,
classic.
For example, which 2005 James Mangold film features Joaquin Phoenix as a cash-strapped cowboy who enters a dangerous radio competition in order to win money to support his family?
What?
Apparently it's Walk the Line. So I had to...
I didn't know Johnny Cash as being a cash-strapped cowboy
entering a radio competition. No.
Wow, that's a...
So I had to do it all myself instead.
You must be very sad.
Yeah. I'll start us off. Sijan, for which film based on a book did the author say that James Mangold had added melodramatic drivel to the story?
Yeah, this is Girl Interrupted.
Correct. You must have seen this one, didn't you?
Yeah, because I'm going to reorder my questions and ask this question as number one.
Okay.
In which film by James Mangold did the author of the book accuse him of adding melodramatic drivel?
One of these days we're going to use something other than Wikipedia for all this. I think that was Girl Interrupted.
Are you sure, Colin?
Pretty sure. Which of James Mangold's films stars characters called June Havens and Roy Miller?
June Havens and Roy Miller. Oh, I don't know that. June Havens and Roy Miller. How do I know all this? It's not any of the X-Men films. Can't be Walk the Line. Hopefully, you won't choose like the most obscure people in any of these films.
It's two customers in the diner.
Yeah, then I'll be like, yeah, no. I'm going to go... Let's go Night and Day.
It is Night and Day.
Oh, my goodness.
Very good. Those are the characters played by Cameron Diaz and Tom Cruise.
Oh, God. It's tough. Question two. Which James Mangold film was remade in Hindi as Bang Bang?
Ooh. Well, that's a good question. I've got no idea.
I thought you watched read a Wikipedia page, Colin. It's like in the
I
first paragraph.
Them. Bang Bang in Hindi. I should have memorized his list of films, which I did not. I mean, it could be Copland, but Bang Bang seems a bit more exciting than Copland. I'm definitely going to kick myself because I've kind of forgotten a big film of his. Maybe it is Night and Day. I'm going to say Night and Day.
Yeah, I got it. It's Night and Day.
There you go. I can't believe they remade that. Wow. Which of James Mangold's only film to win more than one Oscar?
Oh. Oof. I need to go through the list. Did Walk the Line win more than one Oscar? So it's none of the X-Men films again, I hope. Did Ford v Ferrari win more than one Oscar? It has to be one of those, right? I'll go with Ford v Ferrari.
That's correct.
Oh,
yes.
Nice.
Or Le Mans 66, as it was called over here for some reason. Yes, I haven't written them down, but a couple of, I think, sound editing and something else editing-y. Yeah.
Well...
which may be giving away answers to some of your questions.
Yeah, we'll see. Question two. Because I rearranged this. So it's
okay.
Not two anymore.
Yeah.
Question three. Who played the role of Vivian Cash in Walk the Line?
That was Jennifer Goodwin.
That's correct.
I love that film. What specific, I've said role, I really mean, I guess, job, was held by Sylvester Stallone's character in Copland?
A job?
Yeah.
Wasn't he like a sheriff?
He was precisely a sheriff, yes. Well,
yeah. Question four. Ford v Ferrari became the last film to win which Academy Award?
All right, here we go. Yeah. Well, since I can't remember what the other one was, let's hope it's sound editing.
Yeah, it was the last film to win sound editing. Correct. Okay. Because it was mixed with... after that, it was combined with sound mixing.
Oh, yeah.
Best sound.
Which is probably good because no one knew the difference.
Yes,
at least outside of sound engineers. Finally, for you, for a clean sweep, if you can get this one right. In the film Identity, all the different characters at the motel are named after what?
US states.
Correct.
And for you, question five, in what year is Logan set in?
Oh, that's a good question. That's going to be tough, though, because I have no idea.
You're leading this whole queer anyway,
I am. And in fairness, I've got 4 out of 5, and you got 5 out of 5. Can I get the 5th one? Was it set in 2026?
2029. Oh. Very close. Yes, 2029.
Well, congratulations. You win that hard-fought quiz.
It was hard, I have to say.
Having looked at his films, the first one he did called Heavy, I never heard of, but I have now always on DVD because it looks pretty good. So maybe I'll do that on to see on Dr. Z coming up. What are we quizzing on next time, Zijian?
We are quizzing on the Neverending Story film series.
There's more than one of those?
Yeah, there are more than one, and they're all bad. Okay. The sequels are awful.
Great. I've never seen any of them. Maybe I will, probably not. What is our main topic for next time?
Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3.
Looking forward to that one, and we will see you then.
All right, bye.